question as to what happens when a department or an agency of government is badly performing. To an extent that you certainly do identify even some of the individuals. And the minister was responding saying, you know, that's the challenge that we have in our legislation, wherein you can go as far as holding them accountable, departments and agencies. But as to the actual action itself, then the executive authority equally has to take the whole process forward. And the minister was responding, saying to me, it even gets to be very difficult even for them to take such action. I think these are some of the anomalies that we have in our system, which undoubtedly must change, so that you also have a parliament that has teeth, a parliament that bites, so that we are not taken for granted. But the minister was then saying, ah, let's see how best we can deal with those situations as time goes. This is all what members of parliament would always wish to see happening. Am I right, members? We get frustrated for one simple reason, that we have constituencies out there that have elected, we have an electorate that has elected us to make sure that we bring service delivery to them. We have promised them all sorts of things, better life for all, and so on and so forth. Now, when these things are not happening, they literally look upon us. They don't look at a director general or a chairperson of any agency or a CEO of any agency. They look upon these members of parliament whom they have elected to represent them. Now, when we are frustrated and venting our frustrations to you, understand that to be within that context. Nothing personal. We are no friends, we are no family members. We are here to do a job. I think that's the context in which we always engage in some of this in your report. Similarly with the strat plans and also budgets as well. Okay, on that introductory note, that should then set for ourselves as we move forward with these two engagements, one with the Agriculture Research Council and another one with the National Agriculture Marketing Council. I tell you that we're going to be starting off with the ARC, and then we take that whole process forward. We do have a few apologies, unfortunately. One is from Ms. Pilusa Maswane. We all know that she has been booked off sick due to the operations that she has had to have on her two knees. And also Ms. Nyalunga, who is a regular in our committee session. We don't have any other apologies. Members, let's allow the department, rather the ARC, to present to our committee, to present to Parliament its annual report. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Johnson. Good morning, members. My name is Jean Davidson, and I'm the chair of the Agricultural Research Council. My mine is to introduce the team. There are the team that is here today. We have members of the board, Mr. Hamish McBain, who is chair of the Finance and Investment Committee, sitting here next to me. We have Dr. Sibala, who is a member of the R&D Committee. And we have our AFC executive team, also present here, led by our CEO, Dr. Shedrack Mwepudi. The director of R&D, Dr. Mohammed Jenner. Director HR, Mr. Michael Nsianda. Our CFO, Mr. Gabriel Maseke. And our technical transfer lady, Ms. Alati Pana, with us today. I will let the CEO take us through the presentation. The members can ask whatever questions at any stage, should they wish to do so. And I would like the members to indulge us as well to allow our board members to just give us a summary in terms of where they see the AFC today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and honorable members. On behalf of the board and the executive team and the staff members of the AFC, I'd like to take this moment to say thank you for giving us the honor to come and make this presentation to you. The presentation is really not very different from what you've seen in the annual report. What we have done is we have done some extracts of what we think are the key highlights of our performance in the year that we're talking about, of 2008-2009. The first slide really is, basically it's talking, it's the one in front of you, it's talking about our mandate. The next slide really now talks to the basis upon which we try to focus the kind of work that we do, and we try and pay attention to the various policy priorities that our government places before us in order for us to be able to focus the work that we try to do. That is for the year that has just gone past. I think for the first time in the history of the ARC, we had the whole board going out on a strategic planning session. Not the executives, the board. And the board basically, and the board in the case of the ARC is called the council, identified key priorities upon which the ARC must really focus upon. And that's what's before us on the slide. And that is to focus upon making sure that the ARC contributes towards growth in agriculture. It contributes towards growth in exports in the context of innovation, new products and processes, production processes. It contributes towards the reduction in rural poverty, and that is in the context of productivity improvements. It contributes towards mitigating against risks in the agriculture sector. And that internally as an organization that we need to do some serious business analysis in order to optimize the performance of the organization at the AFC and reduce areas where there is duplication, and that where we can find synergies and collaboration in terms of partners such as universities and so on, that we go for them. And that we try and create a critical mass in the context of our ratio of scientists to the rest of the staff, so that there could be optimum performance. And of course, all of this is aimed at improving our efficiency and also improving our reporting as well as our internal controls. That is the instruction that we as management have from the board. In terms of our strategic consideration, this is what is in our strategic plan 2007 to 2011-12. And that is to focus on of basic or fundamental research, and to continue to do what is called applied and adaptive research,
and to also ensure that we really do build our human resources in terms of human capital development, and that technology development and technology transfer continues to occur, and that as an organization, we actually perform, organizational performance must still be inherent in the kind of work that we do. You all know our vision, which is to try and strive for excellence in agricultural research and development. Our mission as the largest agricultural research entity on the African continent is that the ARC is a premier science institution that conducts fundamental and applied research with partners to generate new knowledge, develop human capital, and foster innovation in agriculture through technology development and dissemination and competitive commercialization of our research results in support of making sure that our agricultural sector really develops and becomes prosperous. Our strategic objectives, we've only got really five. The sixth one is internally focused on performance. The first one is around making sure that we generate new ideas and develop and apply new knowledge and technologies, that we focus on sustainable use of our natural resources, enhancing nutrition and food security and safety, enhancing the ability of the sector to manage and mitigate agricultural risks, technology transfer and dissemination, and of course the other one is around our growth and sustainability, which is around performance. The slide before you is just a map that just shows you how we try to link our mandate, our vision, our mission, and our strategic objectives. Honorable members, may I apologize at this particular moment because there were a number of changes that were forced upon us as the public entity by the Department of Agriculture very late in the arrangement. Last year, we celebrated 100 years of agriculture research. And my apology is on the fact that we were only able to send out the invitations to Parliament extremely late. So some members probably may not have received them or received them after the event had occurred. But the important part is that the honor support complex, and I call it a complex because it's three very important institutions for the country. One is the honor support biological product company, which is a public entity that reports to the Minister of Agriculture. The other one is the University of Pretoria. And the third one is the Agriculture Research Council. Those three institutions are based at honor support, and they celebrated 100 years of conducting research and coming up with solutions in terms of vaccines and so on in that honor support area for the last 100 years. And that was the celebrations that were held last year. We were honored by the presence of the then President Halima Mutanze, for which we are very thankful. I will now go through in terms of our highlights according to a number of our strategic objectives. We've just basically extracted a few highlights in the context of our strategic objectives. I won't go through the rationale, which I think you all know, which explains why that particular strategic objective was chosen and exists. But I will go through the actual performance that we've achieved. In the year under review, we had 225 publications. Our target was 215. This is peer-reviewed publications. Just to give you a context, we have roughly about 160 to 170 people in the ARC who have PhDs. So that's more than one publication per PhD in the ARC. That's far in excess of what even universities are able to achieve. So in the context of peer-reviewed publications, I would say we've done fairly well. In terms of patents, we have 25 patents, And that broadly intellectual property in the context of patents and plant breeders' rights for the year for 2008 and 2009. This is patents granted, not patents that were filed. And I think the important part here is that it's a combination of work prior to 2008 and 9 as well as work done in 2008 and 9. So it comes from a whole lot of work that's been done. In a sense, we probably rank among the highest in terms of plant patents and plant breeders' rights of any South African institution. On strategic objective 2, which is around sustainable use and management of natural resources, this is where we focus on issues of climate change and so on and managing our natural resources. We put together maps that look that try to advise on predicting around erosion patterns, which is important for the land care program of government and soil and land rehabilitation programs. We put together an early warning system for black maize beetle, which we've since given to our shareholders, which is the government. We've given some advice on the time and extent of spraying as a result of that early warning system and so on, which reduces the amount of spraying on at least 700,000 hectares of maize. In a sense, you could say this results in an annual savings in terms of the industry of about 70 million rand. In terms of climate change, we put together, in collaboration with the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, the CSIR, we have a project for which we're working with on them using their supercomputers. Spatial, which is land resolution maps or data using satellites and so on, down from 200 kilometers to 200 meters. So we can tell you the soil and climate configuration of a particular land mass of South Africa to a radius of 200 meters. That has not been done anywhere in the world. In large measures, in many instances, it goes down up to about a kilometer. We've gone down to 200 meters. We're probably going to go down to less than 200 meters if we can. It's been applied so far in most of our vineyards, and this is important in the context of trade negotiations when you're talking about geographical indications and so on. If you recall the agreement that South Africa signed with the EU on trade preferences around defining the characteristics of some of our sparkling wines and so on, the geographical indications issue, this is really going to be instrumental in us being able to say we can define it to this particular definition, and these are the characteristics. Can you? So we have some advantage. From where we stand, we know that other countries haven't been that far. But also, this computer modeling and the data is now also being used in terms of guiding policy decisions in at least five areas, particularly around areas that are drought prone to drought. I think one of the things that we've also been doing is research around the emergence and the spread of exotic diseases such as African swine fever, tuberculosis in the buffalo, and corridor disease, as well as trying to get a sense around the spread of pests, which could result in a loss of productivity. We've also been using some of the research in terms of getting a detailed knowledge on change in the epidemiology of diseases, which would be helpful in designing the appropriate control measures. In terms of strategic objective 3 around enhancing nutrition and food security and safety, we've done work around the barley cultivar yields, which we've now realized that it's giving us around 5.3 tons per hectare, which is very very high for barley. Around understanding the malting quality, the grain nitrogen content, which is informative, because then it means then you can also use the barley not only for brewing beer, but also using it as a good source of protein for animal feed. We've done a lot of work around demonstrating new methods for intercropping and harvesting of a number of herbaceous legumes, your cowpeas and pigeon peas, together with vegetables, your amaranthus, morojo, and sweet potato for our rural communities, and as well as trying to demonstrate to them that in some respect, this becomes a way in which they could compensate for good yields during drought periods. Further on, in the year that we are under review, we've planted, together with the communities that we've worked with, around 21,000 fruit and nut trees. These are the fruits and nut trees that we work on as a research entity to at least about 1,500 homesteads. We've done actually a bit more than that, but we know that we can comfortably report for the year under review at least 1,500 homesteads. In the last 2.5 years, I would say in total, what we have done as the ARC, we've delivered around 72,000 subtropical fruit and nut trees that we've delivered to our rural communities. The benefit to that is that the communities and the homesteads are able to harvest the fruits out of these particular trees, such as your avocados, your mangoes, and bananas, and they could stand on the fruit stalls on the side of the road and sell these, but also they could eat this, which is important for household income as well as food security. In terms of strategic objective 4, managing and mitigating agricultural risks, we've been doing a lot of work around, you know, what other diseases can we identify? And for the first time in the history of South Africa, we've identified the existence of a bacterial disease that has now occurred in South Africa, and we've advised the Department of Agriculture. The threat of this particular disease is to the industries that rely on pollination, which is roughly about 90% of the deciduous fruit industry, which has an export value of about 4.1 billion rands. And it's important that we eliminate this particular disease. We've since received some response from the department in terms of resources to try and come up with a solution to eliminate the disease. We've isolated a new genotype of the African swine fever from a variety of ticks and warthogs that are resident in the Gorongosa National Park in Mozambique. And this is important for us in the context of designing control strategies and developing new vaccines. There were about 22 cattle that died in the Vryheid area, and we were called in as the ARC to try and find out what could have been the causative agent. And we advised the farmers as to where this could have come from. And the farmers were able to claim from the Buffalo Association, largely from the Buffalo, the wildlife game farms that exist in that particular area. We received a letter around February this year as a thank you note from the ostrich industry. Normally from around the 5th of December to the end of January, that's the peak season for export for the ostrich industry. Just to give you an indication, 90% of all the ostrich that's produced in this country is exported. And they can't export unless they have a certificate of the quality and the health status of the meat and the animals from the ARC. So it actually means around Christmas season, our laboratories are extremely busy. So we've designed a schedule to make sure that the ostrich industry is able to get those certificates within 3 days of the time at which they send us their samples, animal health samples, that is your blood samples and skin samples and all of that. And the turnaround time from the point at which we receive the samples to the point at which we then issue the veterinary health certificate is three days. They were so happy, they indicated that to us that we contributed to their growth. They've grown around 39% between last year and this year. So for that, we are we are grateful that we've contributed to their growth. In terms of technology transfer, our focus is really around really making sure that we disseminate our research results and that our research results really contribute to the growth of the agriculture sector, the increasing in exports, and of course that it results in a reduction of rural poverty. We have trained at least about 50 extension officers from the Matibandela Agriculture College in Limpopo on identification, documentation, and recording of local innovations and indigenous knowledge systems. We've trained about 98 educators within the context of the Department of Education on soil science, farm productivity, and land reform. We've conducted training courses on wheat production. We've also done some on maize production. I know that's not reported on this particular slide. Because of the efforts of the department to try and focus around the ILIMA campaign, we have designed, produced, and distributed at least 90,000 pamphlets and brochures on vegetable production to be able to advise people on how people could produce vegetables in their own home gardens. We're now trying to go on a drive around translating some of our innovative work and research and publications into local languages. And one of them has been into Xhosa. We've got one in Zulu and so on. I wish we had more resources we could do into a number of other languages. On intellectual property, you know, honorable members, that government has now produced a piece of legislation on how public entities and universities and government must now manage intellectual property arising from public funding. That therefore actually means the various organizations must have their own internal policies on how to manage and comply with that particular IP legislation. We have, through the board, put together a policy on managing intellectual property arising from work done by the Agriculture Research Council. We have seen an increase in our intellectual property in the year that we're talking about, at least 6 plant breeders' rights for the year that we're under review, 25 filings for patents and plant breeders' rights. In terms of royalties, just in the deciduous industry, just as an indication, we've received now about 1.5 million rands. We've been working with, in terms of entrepreneurial development, with about 50 small-scale farmers on food production. I have a slide which I will have to dig out elsewhere on my computer that shows some of the work in terms of Mr. Maluleke, among a range of small-scale farmers in the Limpopo district that we've worked with, showing them how to produce bananas and so on. Mr. Maluleka is now a very successful commercial farmer. We started working with this particular individual in 2007. In 2008, he became a very successful commercial farmer. He was even cited by Farmers Weekly and Landbow Big Blood and so on. In terms of our human resources, we also contribute towards human capital development, as you know. We have a program that's called the Professional Development Program. In the year under review, we had 79 candidates. 15 of those students completed their studies in terms of their BTEC degrees. One had an honors, and two got their MTEC degrees. 7 got their MSCs, and 1 got a PhD. In terms of skills development, we've been able to secure about 3.6 million from the Department of Science and Technology to try and get some of our employees and students to progress. We have about 19 students studying for PhDs in the year under review, and six of them are doing their postdoctoral work as postdoctoral research fellows. In terms of the composition of the ARC, we are now 64% black employees, and 38.3% of them are female for the year under review. We've done a skills audit to try and identify what skills are in short or critical need within the ARC. We've done a workplace skills plan, and we've submitted our annual training report to the Department of Labor, and this has enabled us to be able to claim about 1.4 million rand from the Department of Labor. We try and be and manage our resources as best we can. While on the one hand, we try and make those that work for the ARC get remunerated competitively, we also try and negotiate as best as we can in the interest of the organization. For the year under review, we ended up with an average wage salary negotiation of about 6.8%, which is probably very low compared to what everybody else has done in the in the country. We're done with our restructuring as an organization, and transformation remains key. There is some progress. It's a bit steady. We're still dealing with issues of diversity, particularly among the senior researchers and research technicians. That's where the expertise lies. We are positive relatively in the context of appointments that we've been making. But at the same time, remember, the same people that we're trying to target, everybody else is targeting them. So it's rather competitive. That actually makes the turnover for the ARC relatively high in terms of those particular individuals. In terms of managing our assets, physical security is starting to become a concern. We have the growth of our urban areas. If you recall, the ARC in large measure, most of it was in very rural areas and far away from urban areas. But now urban encroachment has now started to have some other implications in terms of physical security. We're working very closely with the security organizations of the country to try and come up with strategies and measures to deal with physical security. We've done an audit of all our land and buildings assets, and we have an asset management strategy. Internally, we've put together a fraud prevention plan, and which talks about identifying risks and responding to those particular risks and having the appropriate controls of our risks, and informing our employees and communicating that properly, even to our suppliers. We have a fraud prevention hotline, which is independent of management. It's run by one of the audit firms, and we simply get the report, and then we act on the basis of that particular. So it's completely anonymous. In the year under review, we got the report of about 34 cases, and we've investigated them and concluded about those 34 cases. Some of them have unfortunately resulted in us having to implement disciplinary action and dismissing some of those particular employees. Information and communication technology is important to support our research and development, as well as making sure that we comply in terms of our legal advice and legal services. We have a legal small legal unit in the ERC, which talks about compliance and making sure that we do assessment of any new legislation that may be coming, that all our contracts are watertight, and that we also try and provide the kind of information that's required in terms of other information, such as Promotion of Access to Information Act. We put together a manual around that, and we've submitted it to the Human Rights Commission. In many respects, we have land and buildings, and some of the service providers from outside, such as your Vodacom, Telkom, Eskom, and others, once in a while need to go through our land, and therefore those are service shoots that we have to pay attention to, and we have to go through processing those through the board and the minister. But at the same time, we try and make sure that we get value for the AFC and that they don't encroach negatively on our work. In terms of compliance, we've looked at our software licenses. You know, people download software, and sometimes it may be illegal, and we try and make sure that everybody complies to that. And we look at some of the infrastructure that we may have in terms of ICT and make sure that it's the kind of infrastructure that we need, with the right computers that can deliver the work that we need, and that we have reduction in the risk to our business. In terms of managing our finances, honorable members, this is the sad story. In the year under review, between 2007-8 and 2009, we only got a 4% increase in the parliamentary grant. 4%. And if you recall, I indicated to you that the annual wage increases that we settled for the year 2008-9 were 6.8%. Immediately, that starts to tell you that as management, we've got big problems. We try and raise funds from elsewhere, outside government, in terms of contracts based on need and demand supply. And in the year under review, we got about 256 million rand, which is a decline of about 4% once again. Thanks to the new CFO that we got in November 2007, he's been busy putting together a range of internal controls in our finances and so on. And one of the key things that he was able to help us with was in making sure that we get appropriate adjustments. We were able to recover some money from SARS that apparently we had overpaid. And that gave us that extra ordinary item of about 26 million in our finances. This slide, honorable members, is not unique. It's in the annual report. It's also, you know, all of this information is contained in what the Auditor General has reported on. Unfortunately, for the year under review, we ended up with a deficit of about 16 million as compared to 2007-8, which was a surplus of 11 million. Our cash flow for the year was that we ended up with about 36 million rands in the bank. Expenditure on capital items, 62 million rands, which is an increase of about 46%. I thought it important, honourable members, that we give you this slide that shows a picture of the finances of the ARC for the last 10 years. From 1999, 2002, 2008, 2009. As you can see, the parliamentary grant, the external income. Now, if you contrast that to personnel cost, you can immediately see that the personnel costs have, you know, in that red, in the red, I don't know if it will show up there, in that red line up there. Basically has been equal to the parliamentary grant, which actually means you then can't pay your petrol, can't pay electricity, you know, because all you're paying is just salaries. Our expenditure, as well as other operating costs, that just starts to show you our expenditure. The parliamentary grant just can't cover our operating costs. Our net cash. And as you can see, the CAPEX has been rising, and it's been rising because you're a 100-year-old institution, which then means you must renovate these buildings as time goes on. If you haven't been doing it in the last 20 years, it starts to become more critical and even more expensive.
Unfortunately, we don't have the funds for that. We have a qualified audit, but it's a qualified audit on the which comes from us doing the good work. It's the kind of qualified audit you don't feel ashamed to say you got. You got it because you were cleaning up your books. And that's what the Auditor General basically said. We said, okay, fine. We've now, you know, sorted out our books properly. We found some general items and da-da-da-da-da-da. We were not there when these things were happening. Now, here's what it is. And the Auditor General said, well, unfortunately, we're going to have to give you a qualified audit for that. We said, okay, fine. And the reason for that is a very basic one. And that is because we don't know where the source documents are. Maybe we could spend another year, another 2 years looking for those source documents. Last year, we fired or dismissed around 7 people in our finance department for fraud. And these are long-time-serving employees of the ARC. I think with that, I'll stop. I think it's important that the committee realizes that it's important to focus on investing in the ARC because it's good for public good and it's good for the economy. I won't say too much because the slide is already says itself. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair Mwepudi, and also the Chair, Ms. Davidson. I think, members, that's the report. I'm not knowing whether you have any additional chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. No, I don't think we do have. I did say the members can ask questions at any time. I think we would appreciate if there are any questions, we are willing to answer those questions. But what I'd like to, if there's nothing at this point from the members,
let's give them that chance.
Chair. Okay.
Members, the floor is open. We unfortunately are going to be a bit constrained with time. We still have the Marketing Council that must also present its own annual report. Let's see how far back we can push. Any questions? Maybe whilst the members are still struggling, you see the issue about government is that so many departments and so many agencies are doing so much work. And the one major problem that we do experience is everybody working in silos. To an extent, you are commenting here, among others, talking about, you know, beautiful work you're doing in terms of data. The presentation and collation that you have. Simple question for me is how best is that data made use of? You know, you reduced some of your, what did you refer to that 200 kilometers to 200 meters? What is that again? Spatial resolution, correct. You know, to an extent, you know, I'm simply asking myself a question. To what extent are other department agencies and government making use of such information? Or are we finding those government departments and agencies also having to engage in their own exercise exactly the same? Linked to that for me is also a simple question that talks more about coordination of research by similar bodies. They might be found in institutions of higher learning. Others are, you know, doing their own independent research out there. So that we are able, again, to pull together our resources as a nation. So that we also tap on one resource base as a nation in terms of such research. If you could comment on those, because my interest there, more than anything else, is to find ourselves working more and more in a direction wherein we have one center of such research activity when it comes to agriculture.
I would like to thank the presenter. On the generation of new novel, Chesterton, I would like to know what novel products have been developed in the past 5 years and its impact. And the second one is on on climate change, the alignment of ARC activities to climate change. And the third one is the outbreak of bacterial disease on honeybee. There was a report last month in one of the papers that farmers in the Western Cape are faced with this problem. To say how far has ARC affected those farmers. The last one, Chairperson, it's for my own benefit. Here they speak about improving the inherent nutritional quality of food and of food at source. Chairperson, I've got a very serious problem, and this is for my own benefit. A lot of young girls and boys, and a lot of middle-aged men are developing very big love handles or big stomachs. What is ARC doing about investigating the cause of those big stomachs? Because my understanding will be is because of the genetically modified food that we're eating. If that's the problem, are we as South Africans really letting what is happening with our kids to go on? Because, you know, it's a shame to see there's no man who can marry a young girl with such a stomach. And there's no young lady who can allow herself to be married by such a man with a very big stomach. So my comment is on food. What is ARC doing about that? Thank you.
Ms. Abra? Thank you, Chairperson. The first one has to do with the finances. But firstly, Chair, I want to thank Dr. Moyapuli and his team for this report. I must say that I've listened to many turnaround strategies, and many of them just keep on turning around. But over here, one can see that certain things have changed, and I want to thank them for that. Chairperson, as far as the Auditor General's comments are concerned, if one reads those comments in fine print, then it does not behove an important institution to be saddled with such comments. So we need to work towards eradicating whatever shortcomings there are. So I want to just encourage you to do that. Chairperson, on page 22 of the report, there's the ARC's Animal Production Institute. They've apparently conducted a study, and they found that the average cattle herd size for communal and emerging sectors was 19 per operator or emerging farmer or commercial farmer, per emergent person. And it's 413 per commercial farmer, shall we say. Now, it's a very interesting phenomena. And you also state here that the bulk, 47%, is basically meat farming, beef farming, or for meat. What I would like to know is whether you have, in the course of the study, looked at the possibility that a protein-rich resource like milk can contribute towards, on the one hand, the health of South Africans. My comrade here has complained about the health of South Africans, and on the other hand, also as a means of some cash income by promoting small milk producers. It's being done in other parts of the world, whether you have looked at that. Furthermore, Chair, with regard to sustainability, yes, the ARC does quite a great deal of research, and I don't know whether they are responsible for some of the beautiful nature's creations that we see over there, whether they brought it for us. But you've got Nitwer Bay, which does a great deal of good work, etc., etc. What I'm interested to know is, apart from self-sufficiency, and remember that you have also referred here to the challenges that climate change is posing, and I'm a victim of climate change. I mean, we see it happening. We've got problems. Severe.
What's the status of the PDMR? And what is going to cost if we go ahead with it? Or if we drop it? What was the cost? I've been trying to look through. I don't see any mention of biofuel unless I didn't see it. There was hype about the maize being used for biofuels, and that it probably will see maize meal in price increases because we are using maize meal for biofuels. But there are other materials like sugar cane, maize that can be used for biofuels. Can we get an idea, a clear idea or a clear indication of what the department intention about development of biofuels in the country? You mentioned that you are intending to have about 2 summits on energy. The question is, what's the intention of those 2 summits? What do you hope to gain from those 2 summits? Is it just a talk show, or do you intend to get something from them? Thanks, Chairperson. I think that's all from my side.
Thank you, Honorable Ngono, Honorable Ngambi.
Thanks, Chair. I won't go back to what has been raised, but make an emphasis in relation to that one of the budget, that it was going to assist us a bit in some of the questions that we have and our role that we do after this exercise. I'll just raise 2 questions. The first one is in relation to the role of the external service provider. As it's clear that you have appointed them so that they can be able to assist you to develop your roadmap. At the same time, you are saying energy is a very serious, highly contested terrain, and we agree. And with the service provider, they've made it possible for you to improve in terms of your operational excellence. It's true, we agree, when we have got some challenges, that there are some instances where you have a problem of capacity. Of course, we're going to have people coming from outside to assist. But if you are saying, if we're agreeing that energy is highly contested terrain, how are we able to deal with a situation where you have these people that are coming from outside assisting us at the end of the day and are driving the agenda of whatever that we're trying to achieve as government? The other one is in relation to the split, because that is why we are not costing some of the things now. I'm quite aware about the guidelines on transformation and restructuring of the public service, but at the same time, you get to a situation where if you are not careful about the work study, about the job evaluation and the grading of this post, maybe to get a little bit of elaboration from you as a department, is it being done internally or you have people from outside that are doing it? And in a situation where you'll have to be maybe very practical, you'll find that in a department you have a CFO and you are splitting the department.
Minerals, Department of Energy and Minerals. And the level of the COO of that department cannot be the same if you are splitting, because once you send it to work study and they're doing the grading, they are going to come to a different conclusion altogether. So maybe understanding now whether are you doing it internally as a department or you have outside people assisting with that. And lastly, Chairperson, it's about the 150,000 connections, the household. Where are we now? So that once we are dealing with this thing in future, we must know that when it was presented, it was around 110. So that is why we talk of 150,000. Or we're giving 150 starting from zero, so that we can be able to engage around it with the correct understanding. But comment, Chairperson, the opportunity of dealing with this part of speed when this presentation was done earlier on, it's really assisting, because once you come to this track plan now, there are things that we are not starting afresh. We have a better understanding of what is happening in the department. But I strongly feel, Chairperson, that even with some of the other things that we are picking up from the presentation today, if ever maybe we can have those other challenges and have the whole hours giving it the opportunity, having relevant, like this question of finance, I see that we are not going to do justice out of it, because it hasn't been presented, and they are going to give it an opportunity now to respond to it. But at the end of the day, it has got some limitations to us when doing oversight in future, because it was not done properly, as we have done with the split when the MEM came and gave us the presentation that assisted us to have a proper understanding of what is happening. So those were my questions, Mr. President. Thank you.
I'm abusing my just sit next to you, Chair. Oh, just one question, Chair. I learned from the source of my entrepreneur who says that the government subsidy doesn't actually exist, because he's busy putting these desolators. Can you just clarify the situation?
Thank you, honorable members. You have been joined by a very important lady. And she has made time from a busy schedule to come and grace this meeting with the presence. So I would like her to introduce herself and take her rightful seat. I see they have made space for you there. Otherwise, I wouldn't have liked to ask Mr. Kumalo to stand up for you, but I see they've made space for you there, ma'am. So if you can just introduce yourself and take your seat and...
My name is Nelisio Mokuban. I'm the Acting Director General in the Department of Energy. I'm sorry I had to come a bit late. Minister had requested me to provide technical support in Cabinet. She's presenting her energy plan to Cabinet this morning. I'm hoping that the team was able to give the start time for the department. Thank you.
Well, acting DG, the team has so far behaved themselves. I think under the guidance of the DDG, because he's quite an old hand in the committee, you know. Excuse me?
Careful with the old.
Oh, careful with the old. I mean, in terms of experience with the committee, not in terms of looks, Masamban. excuse me, ma'am? Yeah, no, let me rather not dwell on that. But the DDG has really taken care of the department. Members, I think we're going to have a full briefing session. The two chairs, myself, Honorable Gamera and myself, and the staff complement will still, and the management of the committee will still have to work this out. But we are going for a strat plan workshop in January month. We'll see whether we can find time, and then we will call the department also to brief the committee, and also so that we can strategize our strat plan and work our strat plan according to the department. It will just be after the cabinet report club, which we will have our strat plan, because the State of the Nation address always derives and taken from the January 8th statement, the cabinet Lokotla, and all that, you know. So we will have our strat plan after the cabinet Lokotla, so that we know where to focus on and that. But DDG, I don't know if you are still steering the ship, or she can go ahead. You've got the blessing of the boss, so you can go ahead, DDG. Oh, Honorable Gamere.
Just one question. I thought Honorable Nyambi would ask it. Shall I go ahead, sir? One question, just in that. Thanks, sir. It's the issue of the paraffin stoves. Whether fortunately, unfortunately, were launched in KZN. But the question is, are rural communities really going to go as far as that? Paraffin stoves and chairs and so on. What's the plan of the department? You know, the issue is electricity, you know, and also the safety of paraffin as the worst killers in rural communities. It was just that, but the real concern is our communities, are we really going to balance the imbalances of the past by continuing to supply paraffin instead of electricity to rural communities?
Just before, you know, I clearly forgot, I've also got some questions. Like Honorable Nguni has said, abuse the powers invested in me. Consultants. I never heard anything about consultants, how many consultants are in the department, what's the amount on spending of consultants. See that the department has split, and it's totally like a new department going on now, and that type of things, because also what government proposal was that they're going to move away from consultants to these departments. Also, the wind turbine energy. How far the department was at? The last time we heard about wind farms that will be put up in the Western Cape, more of the one that's in Darling at the moment. How far are the department with that? And then I've read, I think it's this weekend or in the week, a researcher or an economist or some chemical researcher which has said that there is so much gas off the coast of South Africa and around the coast of South Africa that the gas here that we've got here, and I think he mentioned also in his article crude oil that could be found in the coast of South Africa. And also in that same article, he mentioned that if we would invest in refineries to refine the crude oil that we find here in our own coast, it will work out cheaper in the long run. It will look at the start, it will look like a tremendous amount. But in the long run, it will work out cheaper, and in the long run, we could then sustain, or we could keep our own in terms of crude oil and gas that we found along the coast of South Africa. Excuse me?
Crude oil was near Walvis Bay or something last night?
Yeah, he said there's crude oil around the coast in the Mossel Bay from the port of Namibia around, and they did a research on that. I think other members have any more questions before I give over to the department? Or not for me?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, about taste, but the lady is sitting right next to me, and she's promised me to speak to me after the meeting.
You know how my feeling is about this private meeting, which I strongly reject. I strongly reject that. If she's got anything to share in the meeting, the boss is here, so I'll report it to the boss.
Okay, Mr. G, I want to know how far we are with the Tasman development, etc., etc.
TDG?
Thanks, Chair. Honourable members. I think I'll allow line function to start with the more critical and juicy areas. But briefly on the area of the budget, if members would have a look at the threat plan document, pages 16 and 17, that is the high-level split of the budget at the moment. It's a bit difficult for us to present the DOE allocation. As I mentioned earlier, that this was still done at the level of the Department of Minerals and Energy, not just specifically DME. But what we can do for today, if we could ask the guy from finance to just take you briefly through this high-level allocation, what affects energy, if he's able to do that. And then once we've received the final the MTF adjustments, then because we are planning to say that at the implementation of that adjustment, that's when we're going to start splitting, then maybe we can come back and present to the committee then what we're going to do between now and the end of the financial year and going forward. But at the moment, we are not in a position to actually split the energy figures out of what has been presented already in the strategy plan. That's the main challenge that we have on the budget. Unless members are looking for specific projects that they want us to highlight and take out of the plan, then we can do that. Just before I hand over to my colleagues, on the issue of the work study and the split, unfortunately, sir, we have not been allowed as government to employ consultants to effect the split of government departments. The six departments have been affected. We've been specifically told that we use the resources that we have within the department. Fortunately for DME, as it stood at that time, we do have a work study team within the department that we have been utilizing for the process of the split. And if you remember, say, I indicated last time when I presented on the issue of the split that once we finalize the structure, the organizational structures which we have done, then we start looking at the issue of job evaluation and job level determination process, which is what is going on currently at the moment. But in terms of resources, we can only utilize the resources within the department.
Just before you carry on, I just want to get the blessings of the members that I think in terms of your financial situation or statements and that, because I think the CFO has explained that after the 15th, they will have a clear picture. Mm-hmm. So members, if we can then ask the department to present it at our strat plan next year, because we are also leaving on the 23rd, and I'm not too sure whether you guys want to be called back to just call to have them while you're in constituency to have them here by the 15th of December to explain the strat plan, to the financial statement. Or can we leave it for the 28th when we come back? January, man. So you wanna come back on the 15th? We'll convene a meeting on the 15th or 16th of December. If that is fine. No, next week we've got mining. We haven't got energy. Or I'll release as proposed the date the 24th of December. So we can leave it for next year. All right, agreed. Thank you very much. So PG, we will then leave it for next year. We will move off that subject. Or if it's that crux of the matter, I think you can email it to the secretary, and then she can then deliver it to the members. Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much. I will just take a first stab at this, and I will just question with my colleagues just to expand a little bit more on some of the issues. According to questions I see here, it says the rural development, are our priorities aligned with that of government? What we have done as a department, we have understood that there is a Ministry of Rural Development, and what would be useful for us is to support whatever strategic direction that they have to embark upon. But also over and above that, members will recall that in South Africa, most of the rural areas don't have energy infrastructure, be it electricity or any other modern forms of energy. So our bulk of our projects or bulk of our money at the moment that we're spending on electrification is to develop the infrastructure in those areas, because we have observed over the years that you are not going to have any rural development unless you've got energy. So that's basically what we are doing right now. While awaiting their strategic direction, we have made a conscious decision to develop and also provide bulk infrastructure. You'll see that in our plan, we've got a number of substations and a number of bulk feeder lines that we are developing in order to make sure that there is some infrastructure. In fact, some of the municipalities, like in the central Karoo, you find that most farmers there, they're actually using diesel generators to do the farming. We firmly believe that we can make it cheaper by bringing in the electricity infrastructure. And also in the process, they can be able to electrify some of their farm worker houses. And then on the issue of the solar water heaters, we had a conference last week, Thursday, where we invited the stakeholders, that is the industry, local government, provincial government, and some of the government departments, and also some international players, to develop a framework on how are we going to do this. You will recall that Minister made a commitment of 1 million solar water heaters. At the time, she said in 5 years. Now it's already 4.5 years. So it means then in the next 4.5 years, we need to have at least 1 million solar water heaters in South Africa. Now the question is, how do you make sure that you do that rollout without making it as painful as possible to the ordinary consumer? Because the bottom line is, the consumer is more interested in hot water rather than the actual gadgets. So how do we make sure that we roll out these gadgets to make sure that people have hot water? Because we have identified that between 30 and 40% of your electricity bill is spent on heating water. So we felt that if so, we can take that, because the 1 million solar water heaters is estimated to at least save half a power station. So if we can be able then to save at least half a power station, not only are we mitigating against climate change because we'll be having less emissions, but also we will be making sure that we reduce the demand for electricity, therefore reducing the supply going forward. So the solar water conference provided an action plan, of which the various stakeholders have been requested to enrich it, so that when we begin to roll out as from the 1st of April next year, then we are going to be moving in a trajectory that makes sure that we achieve our target. On the issue of the IPP, this has been dogging us for quite a while, whether it's renewable or non-renewable, because of the barriers, which include, among other things, the kind of an electricity structure we have, and also the kind of enabling legislation and mechanisms to make sure that IPPs can play a role. One of the issues that we have identified is that IPPs can actually assist and alleviate pressure from both government and ESCOM to raise funds. So what we are looking at the moment, we are looking, we have done some regulations on trying to create an enabling environment for IPPs, but also we are now looking at the next step, what kind of rules the regulator must implement in order to enable IPPs. You will recall that there was a cabinet decision to say For the new generation capacity, we must not have more than 30% of RGP. However, this was just a minimum level that we're looking at the time. There is nothing stopping us now to say what is our financial situation. How can we make sure that we bring more renewable energy? Because I'm of the view that renewable energy RTTs are going to also assist in creating a more diversified energy mix for the country. And then on the issue of the readiness for 2010, I think members are aware that we do have an interministerial committee on 2010 that is chaired by the Deputy President. In that interministerial committee, WISA's officials are always reporting on our various areas of responsibility. So in our case, we report on how ready we are in terms of electricity and also how ready we are in terms of providing standby generators as required by CIFA, and we have to report on how ready are we in terms of the liquid fuel that will include diesel, petrol, and jet fuel. And with regard to the liquid fuel, we have a task team that was set up by the minister. Fortunately, it was prompted by the shortage of liquid fuels at OR Tambo International Airport. You recall that sometime in July, we had a situation where our stock levels were critically low at OR Tambo International Airport. Minister of Energy felt that not only should we look after the jet fuel, we must have the custom that will be led by government with industry to make sure the similar situation doesn't occur again. Because the investigation indicated that there was lack of coordination between various players, that is the industry and the logistical companies. So that's where the problems were. So therefore, we need them there. So in the casting, everybody accounts and make sure that their responsibilities are clearly defined in order to avoid a similar situation happening. On the electricity side, we are also working together with big industry who have made a commitment to reduce their power consumption by 10%. And this is also in the attempt to make sure that there is adequate cushion for the country so that we don't experience any blackouts during the 2010 World Cup, but also even beyond that. Basically, what we are hoping for from this FIFA World Cup is that we are hoping to be able to create best practice for the country going forward. On the issue of refinery, I'll ask my colleague to, refinery and the crude oil. I'll ask my colleagues to report on that, and also on the national planning, and the Debo will also deal with the issue of the nuclear conference. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Didi, Chairperson, honourable members. I think I just perhaps need to be direct. On the issue of the refining capacity, do we need another refinery? The view of the department is yes, we do. Currently, we are importing in excess of 2 billion liters of petrol and diesel, and that is a situation which is going to grow going forward. We believe that if we actually do nothing by 2015, we will be importing 9 billion liters. And that will account for a quarter of our needs. And given our geographical position, we don't believe that is sustainable. There are a number of international players who believe that there is sufficient product out there, and that we should just import. What that does, though, is that you rely on the availability of liquid fuels. You also have to invest in port infrastructure, and you really don't achieve the security of energy supply. There was a reason why in the past there was a decision to have a refinery capacity in the country. It was precisely to ensure energy security, but also it localizes the jobs, because at the moment, the more you import, you are actually importing jobs as well. And one of the priorities of government is to ensure that we create sustainable jobs. A refinery, for example, like the one that's planned for Kuha in construction, will support directly 25,000 jobs, and then in operation over 1,000 jobs. And there are then spin-offs, other industries that are supported by a refinery. We could have another petrochemical hub, for example, being a spin-off of a refinery that is built. So I think we are of, you know, we are very clear about our preference for a new refining capacity in the country. In terms of the crude oil, we are engaging a number of countries in the continent. It would, for example, Angola. The reason why we are having close discussions with the Angolan counterparts is because they have a lot of oil. In fact, some people believe that that oil is all accounted for. There are new discoveries in Angola on a basically weekly basis. And we need to get in there and make sure that PetroSA can actually access those opportunities. We are also, last week we were in Equatorial Guinea, and we are, the minister had discussions with a counterpart on opportunities that South Africa can access in that regard. We will be engaging again in another visit led by the minister with our Nigerian counterparts. But this is not the focus, not only Africa. There are there's work that is being undertaken in Venezuela by PetroSA to ensure that there is security of liquid fuels or crude oil in particular supply. In terms of the South African, water, we believe that there is potential. However, that potential would also cost quite a lot, because we have deep waters, and exploring in deep waters is actually very, very costly. And so we need to first look at where we can get access at a cost-competitive rates, and then, of course, as time goes on, we can have we can then begin to look at our own waters. The availability of gas, I think that information is I would say there's a lot of work that has been done by PetroSA in this regard, and there is gas, but it's small pockets of gas that are not connected. So they become, recovery of those become uneconomic, because you first have to connect all these small pockets, and the infrastructure that you have to put in connecting makes it, uneconomic. But it's not as if work is not being done. There is work being done by PetroSA as we speak. There is a project that they codenamed Jabulani, in which they are trying to see as to whether they can find an economically viable way of connecting those gas pockets. Just to continue on the liquid fuels questions, issue of the berths in Durban and the infrastructure that I referred to. There is a problem with the berth size, definitely, but we have been assured that that berth, the work that is being done there, will be completed before 2010, before the World Cup. And in fact, we got that assurance even when we met the with the oil companies yesterday. I think, though, on the issue of Durban, we need to ask ourselves a question as a country, just also to, in response to this, can we afford a situation where we increasingly rely on one port for liquid fuel imports? And in our view, this is why we are looking for diversification. Because as it is now, one of the most sensitive areas in the country is Durban. The Durban port and the Durban, you know, what is called Island View. It is the single most sensitive area in the sense that a lot of our imports, both of crude oil and liquid fuels, comes via that. And I think if we are forward-looking, I think there is a need to diversify and look at other areas, which is why the choice of Kuha is another area where we can have a refinery. We support as a department because it also, from a security point of view, diversifies. So that is the thinking there. On the issue of the new airport in Durban and the pipeline, it is true. There is no pipeline. But again, it also points to this need for, which has been identified by the new administration, of coordinated planning. When that airport was constructed, I think the issue of the pipeline was not considered, and it is going to be difficult actually to try then and retrofit now. We do understand that there are plans from AXA to look into that. What would happen in 2010 at the World Cup? We believe that, as a department, we believe that the current airport should remain open until the end of the World Cup as a backup. That is our view. We know that there are plans from AXA to shut it down sometime before the World Cup. Our view is that it shouldn't. Thank you.
Okay. I think I missed the question around the wind generation. I'm sure members are aware that between ourselves and the Department of Environment and Water Affairs, we went to the World Bank to make a presentation for funding to look at mainly clean energy, called Clean Technology Fund, and in that program, we requested that wind projects be funded. We requested concentrated solar power projects be supported, energy efficiency projects be supported. And the World Bank approved $500 million towards those projects. At the moment, those funds will be available to both to the current utility and also private sector.
So it is going to be incumbent upon the department then, therefore, to enable an environment where then they are able to send it back to Eskom, even to the private sector, to send it back to Eskom to do that. So wind is definitely part of that support. Yeah, definitely part of that fit that we need. Thank you.
I just want to, somebody coughed when the minister mentioned the figure. The lady mentioned the figure. Can we just have the figure that was approved by the World Bank again?
$500 million. Yeah. That information is also relevant because the driver of that is the Minister of Water and Environmental Affairs.
Yes.
I'm talking about energy. The driver should be the Minister of Energy. Is there anything in the pipeline by energy, Department of Energy, in terms of increasing the wind turbine, increasing the wind farms? Or
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of the current energy plan, what we have done is
DG. Acting DG,
mm-hmm.
Members, can we just get some order and have one meeting?
Yeah.
Or if you talk, just talk so loud that I don't hear you. Okay, thanks.
Okay, so that is that was a part of the presentation today in terms of what happened is her responsibility in terms of the Electricity Regulation Act is to provide the country with a plan. Let's say this is how I project the demand for energy is going to go, and these are the areas I'm going to make sure that there is a supply, taking into consideration of climate change issues, taking into consideration diversification of the energy issues, taking into consideration the security of supply of energy. So that's basically what she is charged with developing, and we intend to release this for consultation before the end of this year.
Thanks, Chair. There are two other related questions on liquid fuels that I did not cover. The first one is on the pipelines, gas pipelines. I think the issue of the use of gas in the country, it's always a chicken and egg situation where people are saying, well, develop the market first, we'll put the pipeline infrastructure. And some people are saying, well, you know, where is the pipeline infrastructure? So what the minister will be doing, in fact, this week on Friday, and again, I think that is going to, we believe that is going to lead to some contestation by vested interest in our view. Minister will be publishing a regulation which will basically be controlling the retail price of LPG. And it will be accompanied by working rules which will indicate the kind of price that we believe is sustainable for both the distributors as well as the consumers. It lowers basically the price. And that is that market that we believe we are creating, but also we make it affordable to people who ordinarily currently cannot afford LPG. And that then we believe will lead to, you know, that pipe, there are a number of players, even private, that have applied to NERSA to put pipeline infrastructure in place. And there are plans by existing companies who have access to gas to actually expand the use of gas and even introduce reticulation. There are some pilot projects they are looking at in new developments to make sure that those actually have a reticulated infrastructure for gas. So there's a lot of work being done there, but we believe the price, if we can start lowering the price, then there will be more uptake from the citizens. The issue of the crude oil and our refineries being configured to only use Middle East crude, with the advent of the clean fuels, when lead was removed from fuels, our refineries then there had to be some reconfiguration. And in that reconfiguration, for example, they were able to then use lighter and sweeter crudes from the continent. In fact, there are refineries now that are using crude oil from Angola. There are refineries that are using crude oil from Nigeria as well. And I think perhaps just to add that the idea that our refineries were not configured to take African crude oil should not have led us not to go to the other African countries to get crude oil, because we could then have been in a situation where we could do swap with the people who then use that light sweet crude and then access then the crude from the Middle East. But I think for energy security, any country, you need your own crude oil as a country, and this is the drive that the minister is pushing in the medium term.
Thank you, Chair. Just a second, have you answered the question in which Norwegian conference?
Thanks, Chairperson. I'll take the questions on the PBMR and the last question raised by the lady about Dance Bank.
Sorry, about what?
The PBMR.
PBMR and Dance Bank.
Oh, okay.
The question was raised that the PBMR has been rejected by the Germans, and that whether now our national nuclear program, is it going to be on the PBMR or is it conventional nuclear power plants? The nuclear energy policy, as approved in June of last year, says that we will pursue the conventional nuclear power plants program. This is because it is accepted that the PBMR is it still has to be demonstrated, so it is still in the research phase and it is still to be demonstrated to work the way that the designers anticipated to work. So until such time it has been proven to work, the country would rely on a conventional nuclear power plant program. Now, these are the pressurized water reactor similar to the Kuhberg nuclear power plant, but only that we now have Generation 3 plus reactors that are currently being built around the world. And there was also an issue raised about the PBMR being dropped, or if it is not dropped, what will it cost? The Department of Public Enterprises and the Ministry of Public Enterprises, if a decision to drop the PBMR is made, those announcements will be led by the Department of Public Enterprises and the Minister of Public Enterprises. So far, we have not heard that the project has actually been dropped. Those announcements have not been made, and we are not aware of the program being dropped. On Dance Bank, Eskom last year went through a process of identifying sites that would be suitable to build nuclear power plants. And from what I understand, the concerns are that the EIA process is fundamentally flawed. Now, we are not part of that EIA process because it is being undertaken in terms of the National Environmental Management Act. So if indeed it is flawed, it will be for the Department of Environmental Affairs to then instruct ESCOM to do it properly, and they can even do that together with the Department of Public Enterprises, which is where ESCOM actually reports. So it will be for those two authorities to actually issue any instructions if it is determined that that process is flawed. Thank you, Chairperson.
Mr. Kumalo?
DG, just two things I thought I should, with your permission, just answer.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Just in relation to the priorities of government, I think that you raised, I think quite clearly those four, we are very much alive to those four, and I think that the departmental programs will talk to those four: rural development, creation of decent and sustainable jobs, focus on health, education, and social services, as well as African advancement. I think those priorities are very much alive to them. Just in relation to the issue that was raised by one of the members, in relation to skills, not here, for solar water heating, it's actually quite interesting that that conference initially, DG and colleagues and honorable members, when we planned it, we were looking at around 400 people attending. It was double that number, around 800 or so people attended. And the skills that were displayed there and the interest in the sector shows that indeed is a kind of capacity that I'm sure will ramp up and build over a period of time. But I think the global trends around solar water heating and generally renewables is much more better than it was a few years ago. So I think we are confident that we will be able to deal with the issue of skills, and there's an industry that can be ramped up quite easily. The other issue that was raised by Honorable Member Kamete, it relates to the issue of the prices of the solar water geysers, and I was looking at the document here. It's anything between 13 and 30,000 to install them. And ESCOM does have some subsidy, and I think the offtake of that subsidy at the moment, the figures I saw last week, were that about 15,000 people a year were taking advantage of that program and rolling it out. And I think the department wants to ramp it up, as the minister has indicated. Just the other issue that was raised by also honorable member relates to paraffin soap. When the minister launched it at Ezingolweni, in Port Shepstone, the other day, one of the things he did, which I thought was quite actually unbelievable on her part, was that she wasn't even worried about the very question that the honorable member is raising. And the minister said quite openly that to people that people must not therefore think that the government, in view of the fact that the department is doing the safe paraffin stuff pilot project, electricity is not. And then he made some announcements there in relation to how electricity would be rolled out at the very spot. So I think it does indicate and underscore the centrality with which the minister is taking the issue of electricity grid community. So because these paraffin stoves are not a substitute. In fact, it's part of the diversification of what people can use in these areas in relation to electricity. Just the last one, the issue of conferences. We've been trying to check. The one we did early this year was around renewable energy. And later in the year, we did one on solar water heating. Those are the ones that I'm aware of, and I'm sure the DG and colleagues, I see them nodding, they agree with what I'm saying. So we've done about two. And the area that has been really a focus and growth area is the area of renewables. The minister, about a month or so ago, signed some memorandum of understanding with the Clinton Climate Initiative, and they're looking at establishing solar parks in the Northern Cape, using the radiation that is found there to produce about 5,000 megawatts. Just using solar, and you've got to create solar parks modeled along the lines of countries like India and others to try and ramp it up. So renewables, as far as I can see, and as far as the department can see, is probably the future of our country, because there you're dealing with infinite resources, because fossil fuels and the Copenhagen things and all that and climate change are challenges, and clearly we have to ramp it up to about 5,000. That's the ambition. Thanks.
Mr. Patton, is there more?
I think there are so many that came my way, Chairperson, that I did not keep them intentional. The biofuel question. maize is excluded as a feedstock for biofuels, precisely for the food security concerns that the cabinet had. And when the strategy was approved, maize was excluded. What we currently are looking at are other crops and those that will not compete directly with food security. The project, for example, that is being pursued now by the by CEF, which is a state-owned enterprise, is that of, together with the farmers in the Eastern Cape in Craddock, is that of using sugar beet, which we believe will not really have an impact on food security. The plan is to grow, actually, sugar beet massively and then use that as the feedstock. What we are currently looking at now from a hydrocarbons point of view is an actual uptake of that biofuel by industry and blending it into liquid fuels. And that is something that that is going to be basically the next step to ensure that we can then look at possibility of mandating a certain percentage that has got to be blended. But we have to do that mindful of the fact that you know, the infrastructure for liquid fuels is really stretched. So whatever targets we place on blending, we'll have to take into account that that fact. Thanks.
Thanks, sir. One issue that was raised, I'm sure maybe it was with regards to challenges facing the department, was the financing of capital projects, whether on nuclear, coal, or liquid fuel. But I think it would have been better if something was said about alternatives on this issue. You know, what's the plan B, how it cannot just end as a challenge. That we should mention the possibilities. It's either we go this way or that way or that way. I'm sure if you can get that. The second other issue is as a cost saving measure, I've heard from the areas where I work that the department assists certain municipalities, more especially with the street lights, in the way of solar, by providing solar street lights. Is this really true? Because I've heard from one municipality that they make applications and so on. I'm not privy to that information, so I said I'll check with the department, because my own municipality would benefit. When Mtunga goes home that side, they would have some street lights day in and day out. Lastly, there's this issue of power. I had a meeting with ESCOM on Monday with some communities with regards, I don't know whether you call it the low power on electricity in the rural areas, where usually whether it's black people used to get these 20 or 40, now they've got to upgrade, is it megawatts or so on, so that when the wind just passes, the electricity just goes off and people cannot be electrified. But then the response also from ESCOM was, it is in relation with the budget that we get from the department. So the question would be, when are we really going to get the 60, I'm sure it's the 60 megawatts, that would get to the rural areas? And also this prepaid system, they say it depends on the budget that they get from the department. We're exposing ourselves because we didn't go through the presentation on the budget.
so that we can also explain at home what's the real budget, because that's really targeting rural people. They need this electrification, they need the good electricity, the one that really has got power. Thanks.
Honorable Bihali, and then Honorable Lee, Honorable Nyambi. Is that the last?
Thank you, Professor. I'm only worried about the treatment that rural people are receiving.
When development is being done in the urban areas, they start with electricity. But to us in the rural areas, it starts with paraffin, of which we don't have money to go to the doctor for the treatment of asthma and TB that will be caused by the paraffin. So I'm just worried about that. Why can't we start with electricity in the rural areas and not paraffin? Or maybe that is paraffin in the urban areas. That is my question. Thank you, Chapter.
I'm very happy that I live in a rural area. Mr. Chairman, there are a number of questions which haven't been answered, and I just want to quickly just prompt your memory about them. The one was the strategic plan. Is it a long-term plan, short-term? The other one was the N3 talking to the Department of Transport. Is there contingency plans and stuff? Then you didn't really answer my question with regard to the Kucha refinery. If it's built, will it in fact give us the capacity you think the country needs, or are you talking about an additional refinery? The coal prices, the contracts for Eskom, what exactly are you talking about there? Remember I said this is a price control, like we've now heard about LPG price control, and the more we go down this route, the unhappier I get. The skills that are required, madam, in terms of solar heating, are very what one might think of basic skills. Plumber. That's what's needed. Not technology, you know, highly technical skills, which might be able to. You were saying about it, which we can deal with plumbers, as I understood it in our discussion. And then I'm going to throw in another one, Mr. Chairman. I heard Honorable Gomez throw in one, so I'm going to throw in one. I just need some feedback about the Exxaro project. In I think in Limpopo, there's an alternative energy project that Exxaro are embarking upon. I can't remember the terminology. Does it mean anything to you? Nothing. Okay, you can't answer a question I can't ask. If you think of it, just please do. But I, when I read it in the newspaper, I thought it was quite an exciting project. And it's being driven by Exxaro. And if I remember correctly, it was right in the north of our country. So it had something. Anyway, don't worry. I'll have a private meeting, Mr. Chairman, when I remember.
Honorable Nambi.
Thanks, according to this document, to be specific with my question, page 4, the last paragraph, I quote, "We have appointed an external service provider to work with us to develop our strategic roadmap. This has made it possible for us to improve our operational excellence as well as ensuring that we have clear performance targets by which to measure ourselves." Close quote. My question was, to get a proper understanding about the role of the service provider in relation to the roadmap they're talking about. The second one, yesterday when we attended the briefing of the LOC, I was sitting next to another member who's not part of this meeting. And then they presented the price of watching a match in terms of these dollars. And we ended up arguing, saying, no, this price is 210, 170. That is why Chairperson, we're making more noise now. And today, Van Lingen said somebody was coughing. But the money was presented in terms of US dollar. And when I'm doing my own calculation with my standard 5 mathematics, I can come to conclusion that it's around 3.5 billion or 4 billion, only to find that I might be wrong. So I'm asking the department to confirm or either to simplify it for us in terms of rent so that we can have a correct understanding so that we end up not arguing, saying, no, it's around these 3.5 billion. Because the certified mathematics and these US dollars might end up not coming into. So I'm requesting that to confirm or either to give us this figure in terms of rent. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. The geologist was just informing me, my colleague next to me is a geologist, he was just informing me 4 billion, almost 4 billion.
If the department will assist us.
All right. If the department don't assist you, we've got an accountant here, also in our midst that can assist. I heard some noises on my left hand side. So I was just checking whether you want to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's really a bonus. This big project that Honorable Nyambe is talking about for the 500. can we be explained how the money is going to be spent? What are the plans of this department? How and when, short term and long term? Thank you.
I've got my views on that. Is that the same as the World Bank that you were talking about? Because the driver there is the Department of Environmental Affairs. Are you the driver?
It was an energy project. So what I'm saying is that we are going to be engaging other government departments because.